This episode of iRescue Radio is brought to you by ProCPR.org. Online CPR training, when you want it, where you want it.
And welcome back to iRescue Radio. I'm Roy.
I'm Jody.
I'm Dan.
Ready or not, it's time for this week's Hot Topic.
Well, for this week's Hot Topic, now certainly you've heard about this.
Mm-hmm, I have.
Well, I heard about it on NPR.
Cyber attacks coming from who knows where. Well, many of us believe we know where.
Mm-hmm. I didn't hear the story. You were talking about the story, and I didn't hear it, though.
Well, my wife brought it to my attention. She heard it on the news and then also read it in the news.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it turns out that the White House, State Department, and Pentagon websites were among those targeted in a coordinated cyber attack that also crippled sites in South Korea.
Yeah.
What a coincidence. Computer security experts said Wednesday. Now, the Department of Homeland Security confirmed that U.S. government and private sector websites had come under so-called distributed denial of service attacks.
Yeah.
You know what that is?
Yeah. In other words, you try to log on, you can't? Maybe?
That's the effect. It's basically they have they basically have put malware on lots of different computers.
Right.
Unbeknownst to the owners of the computers, in many cases, and then all of those computers network together at the same time, I believe, to call out to a website as if to make it seem like it's overwhelmed with traffic, and it basically brings down the server and makes it unusable.
Nasty.
Yeah. Well, it was a pretty massive attack, Johannes Ulrich says, who's the chief technology officer for the private SANS, or S-A-N-S, Internet Storm Center, said of the Internet assault, which began over the weekend. Nothing really terribly sophisticated. It just floods the websites, he told AFP.
Nice.
It prevents the websites from responding. They're just overloaded with traffic.
So it really doesn't destroy anything. It just gives a false sense of overloaded traffic.
Yeah, basically cripples the website so it's unusable.
That's just nasty, though.
I mean, it is.
You know, you think about that for our country. Wow. You know, we depend on the computer for everything now.
Yeah.
And the internet stuff, though. I wonder, internet, I imagine, would do pretty good, frustrate the internet stuff as well, not just internet.
Well, yeah. And that's a good question. Does it affect their operations within? Now, the troops down in South Korea.
Down there.
The troops that were in South Korea said that it didn't really disrupt, although they could have been just told to say that. I don't know.
We don't know. Our military would never tell anybody just to say something.
Dean Turner, Global Intelligence Network Director at security firm Symantec.
Mm-hmm.
Said a little over 50,000 machines may have made up the botnet, and the number of U.S. and South Korean websites targeted was greater than 20.
Hmm.
Now, the State Department spokesman, Ian Kelly, said an investigation was underway, but we can't confirm the source of attacks yet.
Well, of course not.
No. That's a little hard when they're coming from possibly computers within.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, very tricky. And I think what this really says is we are entering into a new dimension of warfare.
Most likely.
And some of the things that have grown so fast, like technology, we need to be on our guard and realize that it's vulnerable.
Well, think about, I'm not quite as techy as you, actually, but...
What?
Yeah.
What?
Think about your cell phone, how much you depend on it.
Well, sure, but... It's just your cell phone. It's easy.
Well, you get your email.
Yeah, those young men do.
Email.
More email.
And you got your you
email.
Got your texting.
Right. That's high tech, all right.
Well, and you got your calendar.
Ooh, I'm smoking now.
But I know when you come in and it doesn't work, it ain't pretty.
No, because I've become reliant. Well, Dan, you've become reliant on it.
Right. Well, that you and I were discussing that is,
It's hard to do without.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's communication. And I think that's the case here, too. I mean, the internet has been known as a great means of communication.
Mm-hmm.
You break down a website that's used as a portal or for information, and it's very difficult to continue business.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So hopefully we'll get on top of it.
Wild.
Yeah. Now let's find out what's going on in the medical sector.
iRescue Radio's top medical news.
The doctor will text you now.
Crazy article. Not so crazy. In fact, I even do it.
Yeah? Text your doctor, you mean?
No, but I have a virtual doctor's appointment.
How does that work?
Well, he sets an appointment just like if I were to go in, but because his office is some distance away, he allows every other or every third, he allows for, like every other appointment to virtually be a conference call. Okay. Now, that isn't quite what this article is talking about. This article is literally talking about the fact that some doctors are allowing you to come to them via the website, through chat, texting.
Yeah.
In fact, let's see what the article says.
Yeah.
Jane Rust woke up early one day last year and discovered that her left eye was red, swollen, and itchy.
Ouch.
Well, so she logged onto her family doctor's website and... Dan, your eyes are always red, puffy, and itchy. You don't ever call the doctor.
Let's talk about me. I just prefer to minimize
your risks,
my exposure.
Well, anyways, by mid-morning, the 61-year-old homemaker received an online response from her doctor with a diagnosis. Conjunctivitis, or pink eye, probably contracted from a child in her Sunday school class, and a prescription to pick up at the pharmacy. I didn't have to disrupt my day at all, says Miss Rust, who lives in Readyville, Tennessee. It's much more efficient.
No, that's interesting, because pink eye, how was she diagnosed? Or she just said this is what the symptoms are, and the doctor said, here's your medicine.
Yeah, she went to the website and typed a message describing her symptoms and asked what to do.
Yeah.
So she basically just chatted, like our customer support.
Yeah.
You know, hey, I've got this and this and this. Mm-hmm. What should I do? And they looked at it and said... It's probably viral.
Yeah.
But if it's bacterial, we'll give her pink eye medicine, which is an antibacterial. And she got it phoned into her pharmacy. Yeah. It was efficient and effective.
You know what I like about that? I'll tell you. It puts the power to the people.
Power to the people. Well,
What I'm saying? It's saying that people aren't idiots. People are not morons.
You know what?
You're not a numbskull.
Yes.
They can take care of their own health.
For the most part. Right. I think that there are a lot of general illnesses that... It's like the doctor, one of the doctors I met when I was working the street as a paramedic. Mm-hmm. He said, well, I could give you a medication for 7 days, or you could wait for about a week and it'll go away.
Exactly.
And that's a majority of these viral types of infections. They really are pretty... benign. They're not going to get worse in most cases. And that's, I think, the beef of most people that think we're overtreated.
Yeah.
And I think insurance companies are saying you're overtreated. We're paying out a lot of money for something that would go away on its own if you just would wait.
Yeah. I see that all the time. People are overtreated tremendously. Anytime somebody goes to the doctor, what do they want? They don't want to go to a doctor and have the doctor say, well, you're okay. Just go ahead and wait.
Yeah, right.
They want a doctor to say, here's your prescription. Yeah. Go take these.
Well, I think back in the days when they gave a sucker.
Well, I like
just,
that.
You know what? They just gave a sucker more often, a big lollipop.
Or a prize. A gas card would be nice.
Ooh. Let's see. It could cost the insurance company $75, or I could get them off my back with a $35 gas card.
I question that number just on raw logic.
You might be onto something there, Joe.
All right.
So anyways, I think we're going to see more and more of this. I think it's probably long overdue. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that we do not have to go in. I mean, most of us know when we have a sinus infection.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could it be something really severe? Yeah. But in most cases, if there was enough education, I think that you could probably figure it out. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been more than 7 to 10 days. It's getting worse. I'm running a fever. I'm fatigued. It's not getting better. Okay, now I probably should go in and, you know, find out if it's a real infection or not. But, so technology's on the rise. And, people tease us for doing CPR via e-learning.
Right. And doctors do this via texting.
Yeah, they prescribe prescriptions
via text.
So, interesting stuff. Now, on the heels of that, did you read about the double failure at the USA hospitals?
Yeah, this is taking it to the different level, because now we're going beyond standard, okay, you got a flu, you got a little sniffle, you need a little antibiotic. Now we're talking about something where you need medical treatment.
Right. And you brought this to my attention, so tell me more about this whole thing.
Well, this just came out here. They did a study between 2005 and 2008, and they just got the results from it here yesterday. They published it.
Okay.
And the study shows that more than 4,600 hospitals across the U.S. Were examined for this. They were looking at the death rates for heart attacks, heart failure, and pneumonia from these hospitals. 5.9% of hospitals, patients with pneumonia died at rates significantly higher than the national average.
Huh.
So what they're showing is take a look at the hospital that you go to or the hospitals in your area, and you can kind of compare the hospitals to see what kind of care they're giving for three major things, heart attacks, pneumonia, and heart failure.
Okay.
And these are serious things that require pretty significant medical treatment.
Yeah.
So they're comparing the hospitals. Now, it was interesting because it gives you the top 100 and the bottom 100 hospitals. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I was kind of thinking they would be more geographically located. Like you'd see like the top 100 would be in a certain area and be bad and whatnot. No, they're all over the board.
You showed me the map. It looks like it's, I mean, there is a big consolidation in the Midwest, right? Or in the central mid to lower states, but that's probably because of higher populations.
Mm-hmm. And I would think also, you know, like there's some in Missouri, for example.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you know, Golden Corral buffets.
It always slants the table a little bit, depending on who's got the... Well, then we should see them in Pennsylvania with the Philadelphia cheese steaks and the fried ice cream sticker bars.
But those are healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, they sure are, Jody. Anybody for a cream puff?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's a neat tool. We have to put a link up there on how to get to that, because then you can search states. You can search top 100, lowest 100.
Check out your own hospital.
Yeah.
That's what they're encouraging. So good tool. And, you know, I think this accountability will always be good in regards to keeping our hospitals on track.
Yep.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Now it's time for the ProCPR.org. What would you do? ProCPR.org. Online training when you want it, where you want it.
So I thought about this for a while in regards to the training question.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan, you're just so talkative today.
I'm just trying to help here. So find me on Twitter.
We'll just let it ride. Give you a day off, kind of.
Yeah, I would rest.
Yeah. So in regards to the training, you know, we thought we just might put this out here. Last week, we talked about Michael Jackson. Mm-hmm. And there was some really... Well, it's a touchy subject anyways, you know, as a pop star and, you know, everybody's looking to point a finger and say why he died and this, that, and another. But the whole real issue here was that he was on a bed. They were doing CPR on him on a bed. Mm-hmm. And the old cliche is hospital on a bed is ineffective CPR, or CPR on a bed is ineffective CPR. And so it's under scrutiny,
right?
Well, the fact of the matter is there are beds you can do CPR on. And in fact, most hospital beds have the ability to firm up, have a headboard that comes out and goes underneath the back of the patient and becomes a CPR board. Mm-hmm. Or in some cases where you've got inflatable beds or sand beds, which if you don't know what I'm talking about, intensive care, long-term care sometimes has that. It's anti-pressure so that people don't develop sores and things like that. Those have a CPR button that you push it and it almost instantly deflates, I mean within seconds, and firms up so that you have a solid surface to do CPR. Well, I think some people would scrutinize a little bit and say, are you trying to tell me that you could not do effective CPR in a bed? Well, if we're going to start getting to splitting hairs, depending on the firmness of the bed, depending on the type of the bed, depending on the patient size, depending on the patient's, there's lots of dynamics. We're really starting to get a little crazy about it. Let's just get to the basics. It is not the consensus recommendations to be able to do CPR on any soft surface because
when you do compressions, you need to compress the chest so that the heart compresses. If you're going to squish down in it, whatever surface you're on, no matter what it is.
Yeah. Couch?
If it goes down into that surface and doesn't actually compress the chest, well, there you go. There's no CPR happening.
Exactly. We have to have resistance on the back so that we can actually do the full compression, so that we're compressing that organ called the heart to be able to maximize the circulation, the artificial circulation we're trying to achieve to buy time. Now, you hear it oftentimes that people say, well, you know, when you're working on a live patient and doing CPR, you got to be careful so you don't kill them. Well, what we really need to make sure of clarification is that when a person needs CPR, they are
dead.
Right. Or else they're not supposed to be getting CPR. Right.
Well, it's like the one article I read about the nurse who'd been, and this is surprising me. It really, I couldn't believe it. The nurse had been a nurse for many years. And she said she didn't want to be scrutinized or for doing CPR on live, or I forget how it was.
On a live patient.
Yeah. And she said she didn't want to be scrutinized on how deep you were doing CPR to keep somebody alive.
Yeah.
Well, you're not keeping them alive by doing CPR.
No.
You're keeping them dead a little longer until they can get advanced care.
Yeah. She may have misspoke. I think she was trying to describe something else, comparing between a mannequin and a real human being, but the way it was said makes it sound, again, like that common mistake that we think that when we're doing CPR on a real human being, that we're doing it to keep them alive. When in reality, I was telling you, I wanted to, well, anyways, my favorite motto.
Yeah.
CPR keeps people dead longer.
Yes.
Right?
It does.
Because we're talking about two different phases of death. We're talking about the first initial phase, which is clinical death. Virtually, that just means the patient is not circulating oxygenation on their own power for whatever reason.
And brain cells during that time, that first 4 to 6 minutes, or first 6 minutes, that brain cells are still quite alive.
Yep.
Heart tissue is still quite alive. Yep. Lung tissue is still doing all right.
Yep.
However,
after 6 minutes, they start to die. Mm-hmm. And without oxygen circulation, they begin to die permanently. Mm-hmm. And after approximately 15 minutes, barring any miracles, cold water or cold weather cardiac arrest, we can pretty much say that science has shown us that after 15 minutes without oxygen circulation, cells are dead permanently. And there's no way to revive those back again. We call that biological death, permanent death.
Yep.
So, to clarify, our whole goal in doing CPR is to make sure that whether we're doing compression-only CPR, which is a real favorite nowadays for lay people, or doing full healthcare professional-level CPR with rescue breaths and compressions, pulse checks, and the whole works, that the whole goal here is not to, and I do side with the nurse in this, and that we're not trying to get so caught up as to say, if I do this a fraction of a tempo off, or if I don't do the compression exactly the right depth, that I'm going to kill the patient. Right. When in reality, that's too late. That's why you're doing CPR. They're already dead. And the goal is to buy time, not to create an artificial life support, which is sometimes what people are thinking about.
Yep, exactly. So, it's not about the tiny little details. It's about acting.
That's right. Acting?
Doing.
Oh, it's not really about caring. It's about acting. It's like you're caring.
Yeah. Don't really care. Just pretend.
Don't really do compressions. Just act. No,
just act.
It. Pretend like it.
Yeah.
Make it look like it is.
That's right.
It's all that matters.
It's all Hollywood.
So it all depends on how it looks when the TV crew is there. No. So anyways, in the latest release, which was compression-only CPR, I mean, you know how I feel about this, Jody.
Yeah.
If it's good enough for a layperson, why isn't it good enough for a healthcare professional?
Exactly.
I mean, I understand that when we get into advanced cardiac life support, it's a little different animal because we're talking about invasive procedures.
Yeah, we're talking about oxygen. We're talking about IV therapy, drugs, intubation, electrical therapy.
IOs.
All different ballgame.
Yeah, lots of different things that are very technical and take a lot more training. But when we're talking about basic life support, it really is a time-buying mechanism so that we have biological life to work with in an advanced level and hopefully reverse the effects of whatever it was that caused them to go into this in the first place. And in this case, even with Michael Jackson, let's just suppose for a moment that he didn't die because of a heart anomaly that he literally died because he was sedated, right? This is the the hype right now, is that there might have been sedation issues. Well, normally what that does is knock out a drive to breathe. So they go into an asphyxic state or a non-breathing state. So when they stop breathing, they're literally going into a hypoxic state due to not breathing.
Yeah.
That then leads them to the cardiac arrest. So in theory, had the people around him been able to actually notice early on that he was breathing irregularly or too shallow and turning colors, they could have literally done a probably a head tilt chin lift and give him rescue breathing, call 911, and then gave him the antidote to reverse the anesthesia, and he might be alive today.
Yeah. It's hard to tell because, you know, like especially if you have agonal respirations, then agonal respirations look like you may be potentially breathing, but it's really more of a...
It's kind of... I describe it like the fish on the beach.
Yeah, that's exactly
gasping. It really sounds like it looks agonal. Like they're just taking a gasping breath every now and again, but it's certainly not breathing.
No, it's not.
Yeah. And then from there, the heart goes bradycardic and then goes into a dysrhythmia usually and then into full arrest.
Yep.
And even then, with good CPR, we might be able to turn that around long enough for advanced life support to get there to actually either pace the patient if the heart's not responding on its own or actually get it into a rhythm through chemical actions, medications, and potentially save a life. And not trying to simplify things. And, you know, in all fairness, too, and this has always been something I think that I've had to really come to grips with is that sometimes it's that person's day to die.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you or I or anyone else is going to do to change that.
Nope.
It's a harsh reality at times, but it is a reality nonetheless. So the best way to survive cardiac arrest, I've always said.
Don't have one.
Exactly. And if you do, be there. Remember not to fear liability. Don't be unsure of your skills. It doesn't hardly take any. All you have to do is basically start compressions if the person is unconscious, unresponsive, and call 911. And that's going to help to circulate oxygen to the vital organs until help arrives. Don't fear getting a disease if you don't come in contact with blood or body fluid. And even if you do come in contact with blood or body fluid and have a CPR shield with gloves, you can't get past those barriers. So you're safe there. And by all means, please do not feel like you're hurting the dead person.
No.
Believe me, believe Jody, they don't mind.
They don't.
In their current state, they don't care if their ribs are cracking.
And they won't feel it a bit.
No, they won't. So, and that's your worst fear usually as a rescuer, is that you're going to crack ribs or puncture a lung or bruise the heart. All of those can happen, but they don't happen as often as you'd like to think they do.
Nope,
so
they don't.
There you go. There's the education for the week. We hope that's helpful. The poll question for today, do you feel like you're getting your money's worth via virtual office visits?
You
like
know,
texting or video conference?
I kind of wonder how many people are actually currently doing that.
Yeah, you too.
It's interesting.
I think we're going to see more of it.
I think so, too.
Yeah. And especially if insurances are starting to pay for it.
Yeah.
That's the biggest hurdle, I think.
Well, like for myself, I'm not going to go to the doctor when I got the sniffles.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Right.
Now, if I think I have a pneumonia, bronchitis, something or other going on, getting really bad, I still would prefer to get an antibiotic first to try it without having to pay the 70 or 80 bucks to have a doctor just look at me for 2 seconds and go, here's your antibiotic.
Here's your antibiotic. See you later. Yeah. Drink plenty of fluids, rest, and here's your antibiotic. I know.
Good point.
I think so, too.
It'd be interesting.
Yeah. It's a lot of it is liability and fear of liability. You know, if I don't see them and I miss something, I'm in big trouble. That's the fear. So if we can overcome some of those fears or we get some good protocols down so that the ears, nose, and throat stuff, the, you know, lighthearted things can get taken care of.
Yep.
We'll be all set. So, that's a good one. It's been fun.
Yeah.
Dan's been quiet.
He's been very quiet today, but that's okay. We give him a little time off.
Once we'll give you, you know, you can have down times, Dan.
I'm a little busy right now.
Well, maybe next time you'll do better.
I'm steady.
So, from the guttural bowels of iRescue Radio Studios, I'm Roy.
I'm Jody.
I am Dan.
Bye-bye.
If you have anything you would like to contribute to iRescue Radio, you can contact us toll-free at 866-661-5701 or visit our website at irescueradio.com. The commentaries in this podcast may not reflect the views of iRescue Radio or any of its sponsors or subsidiaries. iRescue Radio will not be held liable for any damages resulting from the advice given in this podcast.